You are listening to Evenings on ABC Radio with Rebecca J. Namuno. Now, this month is all about reboot your life. And there are several ways that you can do this. And of course, one major aspect of life and relationships is, of course, sex. Now, sometimes there can be issues when it comes to sex. Sometimes there can be a lack of sexual compatibility. And there are solutions and there are ways of overcoming the problems in your sex life. And I'm so happy to be joined by our extraordinary sex and relationships expert. We have Jacqueline Hellier here. How are you, Jacqueline?
I'm very well, Rebecca. Thank
you. Excellent. Thank you for joining me. Now, what do you think are some of the major issues that people have when it comes to sex within a relationship?
Yes, within a relationship. So I see people coming in all the time and they're generally going, something's kind of not working. And it generally tends to be there's boredom or there's routine, tired, not really being understood, not being able to talk to each other, having strange ideas about what sex is or should be. I mean, really, who knows? Because no one ever talks about it.
True.
And a really, really common one is this misbelief in our society that sex should just happen. Like you should just sit there and the lust should just descend, even though you've woken up next to this same person God knows how many nights in a row.
Yeah.
And for some reason you should just get it on. And it doesn't happen like that.
No, no.
It has to be cultivated. Desire has to be cultivated.
And there's nothing like a little bit of wooing and a little bit of romance, is there, when it comes to that? I mean, I think that's a kind of a bit of a lost art form as well.
Yes, and I can tell you, because I see a lot of couples who are in really good places as well, because I also run retreats and all sorts of things like that.
Right.
So I don't just see problem couples.
Of course,
and
yeah.
I see the couples that get better. But the thing is that the ones who do it well, I sometimes say they treat their sex life like a hobby. So the definition of a hobby is something you do for pleasure in your leisure time. And as far as I'm concerned, that's sex, or at least it should be. If it isn't, come and see me, folks. But, you know, like if you had a mutual hobby like scuba diving or something, you'd talk about it, you'd go and do it, you'd talk about it after, you'd think about things, you'd find out what your partner was liking. And, you know, it would be this joint creation. It would be a joint experience. And if you did go down to the same old spot time after time, you might both be going, could we just go somewhere else to scuba dive?
Experiment a bit. And you mentioned there the fact that people don't talk about it.
Yes.
And that's probably one of the major, not the biggest problem to start with, isn't it?
People
think sex is something that should be whispered about
or
you know, it's late at night and it should never be met. And you know, or heaven forbid you actually have sex in the middle of the day. I mean, oh my goodness, for some people, that's just unheard of.
Yeah. And so we have all of these myths as well associated with the fact that we don't talk and all these rules.
Yes.
Crazy rules.
Crazy rules. And how do you think we can start the conversation to allow for everybody to be a bit more comfortable when it comes to sex as part of our lives?
Yes, and that's probably one of the main things that I do with people. And people are always saying with me that I've given them the language.
Yes.
They now actually have the ability to talk and sometimes actually give them words. We don't have good vocabulary in English to talk about sexual issues.
Yeah.
And a lot of the language we have is kind of a bit crude or immature or childish or something.
Yep.
So anyway, so I sort of help people with that and creating your own language and finding words. Like we have words for food. And as far as I'm concerned, food and sex is quite similar. It's very nourishing and it's fun.
And they're often used at the same time.
And they often are. So you could use this little radio segment to get the conversation going. You can turn to your beloved and you say, you know what, darling? I'm not sure that we talk about sex very well either.
Yes.
Like, are you actually an expert on your partner? Do you know what they like?
That's right.
Do you know what they don't like? And I'm not talking about do they like, you know, whips and chains or do they like, you know, the lights on or off. I'm talking more subtle stuff. Way more subtle than that.
In what way?
Yeah, so we were doing it today. So this young couple come in, they're not having sex. And so we get talking and I say to him, so tell me, what is it that you think is important about sex? What's something that matters to you? And he was sort of like, well, I think the context is important. I'm like, okay, well, this is cool. And then he started talking about clothing, right? So he's sort of still talking very broad sort of concepts. I'm like, okay, clothing. So let's explore that a bit. Mm-hmm. You know, what sort of clothing? And he goes, well, I like it when she wears nice underwear. And she looked at him. This is a couple who've been together for 10 years. She looked at him and she goes, no.
She never knew.
No, she didn't knew. Didn't know. Anyway, and then a little bit further on. So we talk a little bit about underwear. And then it was not just underwear, what type of underwear. And did they want to go shopping together? Did he like a surprise? And she goes, yeah, but I don't always wear my underwear like last thing at night because I've kind of already got changed, you know, not the sexy stuff. And I'm like, yeah, but do you show it to him when you're putting it on in the morning?
Yeah.
Like focus on the dress. You know, often we don't think about sex until last thing at night. When in fact, what you want to be doing is cultivating this. It's like a delicious energy that you share with your partner.
That's right. And it's almost like a tease too, isn't it? It's that sort of tease in the morning if you show it's the putting on. You can then imagine the taking off at the end of the day, can't you?
And it keeps you thinking about it. Because too often people think that there's life, and then suddenly last thing at night when we're absolutely exhausted, they're sick.
Yeah,
seriously, who can be bothered?
I know. And also that idea that, you know, sex at night with the lights out.
Yeah.
Or, you know what I mean, dull. And are we done yet? That kind of thing.
Yeah, we haven't done it for a while, so I suppose we should.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, some people, and there's all these myths too. I see more couples where the man's got the lower desire.
Mm.
So there's all these myths out there that, you know, the men are gagging for it, the women are holding out on them, you know, men can get it up like that, you know, they do it like this, women are there's so many myths. And, you know, another common one I get is premature ejaculation. Yes. So I get all these guys or their partners turning up saying, you know, I come too soon.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say to them, so what's your problem? And they look at me a bit puzzled, like, you know, I come too soon, I have premature ejaculation. And I'm like, yes, but what's the problem?
Yes.
And they just look as though I must be some sort of lunatic. And I'm like, what is actually the problem about you coming sooner than you want to?
Mm-hmm.
And then we actually look at what the problem is. Is she satisfied? Is he worried? Is she satisfied? Is he concerned because he's been watching a lot of porn and thinks he should last for a million years?
Yes.
Is it that they've probably, and everyone comes to this, there's this unwritten rule. We all know it. When the man ejaculates, sex
is
stops.
Over.
We're done.
Ba-bow. Get out. Everybody out.
Roll over. Don't look at each other because we're both frustrated and we can't talk about it. There is no rule.
There are no rules.
There is no rule that sex. We treat sex like a three-course meal. And if you start entree, you've got to go through till dessert, and when you've had your after dinner minute stops.
Yes, that's right. And
even if the other one's still hungry.
And some people even have things like they plan the entire menu for a week.
Yeah.
So it'll be like on Wednesday we're having dinner together, but no sex. Thursday is sex day.
Yes.
Thursday we always have sex on a Thursday. Like that must become boring is the first thing, but it also then must become almost an obligation because it's something you do every Thursday night.
It can. It depends how you approach it.
Right.
It depends. It's all in the approach. It's not the what, it's the how. That's one of my favourite things. Because for some people, if you know that you're setting aside sacred space, our time, and Thursday night's a good night because we haven't had to ferry the kids all over the place, you know,
yes.
We haven't had full-on days. That's not a bad night for us. So we're going to do Thursday night. But don't think of it as sex night.
No.
Think of it as our time.
Yes.
We get the kids off to bed nice and early. We retire to the bedroom. We put on some nice music. We have a glass of wine. We chat. Bit of a foot rub and see what evolves.
Happens. See, that's the thing.
Yes.
And I wonder, it's interesting because I have used quite a few dating sites and dating apps and things myself being single.
Yep.
And it's interesting how there's an expectation that should you say yes to somebody to go and meet with them for a drink, for some people that means sex. So there's already a preconceived idea of where the night is going.
Yes.
And I've been on dates myself where I've been perfectly aware from the outset that that's what the man is interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And there is – and I feel almost like – not. I feel repelled by it is probably the word.
It is repelling.
Yes.
Because whenever someone is too intense or there's too strong an expectation coming from them,
that's right.
What do? You shy away.
Exactly.
Now, when you think about what is desire – desire is a moving towards.
Mm-hmm.
And I always are telling my clients this. If you want your partner to desire you, you have to give them space to move towards you.
Ah, that's interesting. Yes.
Right. That in itself will change a whole lot of things.
Of course.
So I encourage all the listeners to start. If you need a topic to get the sex talk starting, there's your big one.
There's the big one.
Desire requires space to move towards.
That's a really good, really good phrase to keep in mind.
It is.
It's a really good, and it's also to live life by, really.
Yeah.
It's part, and sex is part of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I guess what would be sort of a conducive, what are some of the conducive things that we can have to a hot sex night? Like what sort of things can you do to improve the mood or improve the moment or even, you know, elongate the moment if you need to, so to speak?
Yes. Well, look, to some extent that depends on you.
Yes.
Because that's a really key thing, to know who you are and what you want and who your partner is and what your partner wants in the moment. Because
yes.
it's going to change depending on how you're feeling and the time of life, the stage of life, whether you've got kids and how old, all these sorts of things are really going to make a difference. But if you can allocate some time, you've got to set aside the time, you've got to set aside the space. Because I can tell you, if you think that sex is going to be last thing at night when you're exhausted, if you do have it at all, it's probably not going to be very
great.
Good.
Yes.
So at the very least, you're got to bring it a little bit earlier. And if you don't have kids, have it before dinner. You have it at a time, you know, you come home from the gym and you're both a bit pumped up, do it then.
Yes. And what about if a partnership, for example, is on the same page initially when it comes to sex? And we actually have Patricia who called and she wants to ask this question, that do you ever find that people's appetites just do a complete 180 for no reason, mostly in the middle of their life, for example? Is that something like that happens often? And if so, can you keep your partner happy when you're no longer sexually compatible?
All right. There's always a reason. Things don't just suddenly switch off or switch on. And when you actually start looking at what's going on in your relationship, in the bedroom, in your life in general, you'll find that there is something going on. Because all of those myths about, you know, things falling off when you have babies or when you hit menopause or, I don't know, when your left leg drops off or whatever, whatever it happens to be, there's always masses of people who that doesn't happen to.
Of course.
And when you look at the people who it doesn't happen to, it's usually because they're paying attention to themselves and they've got good communication with their partner so that they can modify what they need to do.
Yes.
So if you've, you know, it always starts off good. I mean, generally it starts off pretty good. You know, you fall in love, they're hot, it's gorgeous. Generally, you're doing all the right things. You're paying attention. You're on your best behavior. It's all new. There's lots of difference. There's lots of anticipation. All of those are the criteria for a good sex life.
Mm-hmm.
Then people fall in, get live together, and you know, it can be good for a while longer, and then the complacency sets in.
Yes.
It gets boring. And I see so many people, particularly women, who have bought into the idea, oh, well, you know, I'm getting older, whatever, I don't like sex anymore, and then they meet someone new. And then they're like, oh, actually, I still have it. Or they even read a book, you know, the 50 Shades of Grey phenomenon.
Yes.
I was getting middle-aged women in their droves coming to see me going, oh, my God, I thought it had been switched off. I read this book and it's back on again.
I know, it's amazing. I performed in a parody show of it up in Brisbane performing a play called Spank, which I thought was hilarious. And it was amazing. The audiences that came to the show, it was like this wild hen's night every night for the women in the audience, because it was almost like, I really loved it because I got to interact with the audience, but it was almost like the women were finally releasing something. It was like a collective orgasm in the show.
It's absolutely fabulous when people actually, particularly women,
because
women are often very, you know, subjugated sexually. It's like, it's beautiful because sex is actually a really, really beautiful, wonderful energy. It's life energy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you suppress your sexual energy, you're suppressing your life energy and everything becomes really flat.
So true.
And then when people find it, whether it's because they have a new partner or they've just decided, you know what, and I get a lot of people coming to me saying to me, I just want to sort this sex thing out. Or couples come to me and they go, we know there's got to be more and we think you can tell us what that is.
Yes.
And generally I can if they're open to it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's amazing too, because I guess a couple that has been together for quite some time, they change in other aspects as well, don't they?
Like
their appetites can change for food, you know, taste buds can change, fashion sense can come and go, haircuts, hairstyles. So the partner that you're with is constantly evolving, as are you in other aspects.
Yes.
So it's like the sex life should be evolving along with everything else.
Absolutely. And that's part of the problem, because we have a fairly immature attitude to sex in our society. For all sorts of historical reasons that I won't get into. But we've got this idea that 18-year-old sex is like, that's sex.
Yes.
And anything else is bad. But sex is like wine. You know, young wine's kind of very brash and whatever. But an older wine. It's matured. It's got complexity.
You
it's
can
got
savor
layers.
It.
Yeah. In some of the spiritual traditions, they say that a man can't even be a good lover till he hits 50, because until then he's too obsessed with his penis. And I think it's true. You know, as people get older and wiser and more self-assured in many ways, the type of lovemaking, and I prefer the word lovemaking actually, because it's not just about penis and vagina and gigabit.
Yeah.
There's much more to it, and it becomes really beautiful. And when that energy's flowing through you, you just have so much vitality and
absolutely. I refer to it as my mojo.
Yes.
And if I, you know, if by chance I happen to be, you know, going through what I say is a dry spell, I just say to everyone, I've lost my mojo. I've lost my mojo. And it's amazing. You know the moment that you get the mojo back. And often when I lose it, it's when I'm completely, you know, absorbed in work and it's monopolizing my time, when I'm unhappy with a particular situation that's going on in another aspect of my life, whenever I lose my confidence as well, that can really affect how the energy that you give out to another person.
Sure.
And that's what everybody's picking up on, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. And if we're talking primarily here about within relationships, if you have a good relationship and you've got one where sex is your hobby and it's on the table, then it's quite easy to talk about it.
Yes.
Like you might with something, I'm feeling a bit flat at work, or I've lost my appetite, or I don't feel like going to the gym, or my best friend's been horrible to me, I'm not feeling very sexy at the moment, or you're not treating me in a sexy way, or you know, the mojo's
gone.
You can talk about it, and if you can talk about it, you can actually then start addressing
that's
it.
That's right. And it's interesting because I perform in the area of stand-up a lot, and it's really interesting to look at the difference between men and women on stage talking about sex and relationships. And you mentioned it before that the women often play, you know, as almost a subservient role in a relationship, in a heterosexual relationship. But it's interesting to see how people react when a man on stage talks about sex and when a woman is really honest. And I'm quite honest on stage about
tell you my, on radio too
about relationships and things, and I think oftentimes an audience can feel slightly uncomfortable because a woman is daring to say what she likes.
Mm.
Do you think that women feel that they have to keep quiet a desire?
Yes, you're hitting on something really important here. Now, I want to preface it by saying that female sexuality is more complex than men's, and it's also more wonderful. Women are actually more sexual than men.
Yes.
But because we're more complex, we can have wider experiences and bigger experiences. And the better the experience a woman has, the more pleasure the man has.
Yes.
Because men got a lot of their sexual pleasure through the woman's pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
Women need to understand this. Men get it intuitively. But because historically women's sexuality was suppressed and was just there to serve men's sexuality, it got very limited and very small. But also women, and we're still not brought up to actually be able to ask for what we want or even to identify what we want. So the men generally are desperate to know what their female partner wants.
Yes.
But she's incapable of being able to say it. And that goes way, way back, probably to when you were a toddler and you were playing with yourself and your mum came up and slapped your hand away and said, don't do that, that's disgusting. That's the way we're brought up. And, you know, at least boys, you know, they can play with their willies and everyone, oh, look, he's playing with his willies.
It's just accepted. Oh,
but it's not with girls.
No,
and you grow
very
up,
true.
You know, you do your sex ed, no one talks about the clitoris, no one talks about pleasure.
No.
You don't really know what you're supposed to do because no one really talks about it, and it's just whispered a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
We know a bit more because of porn, but we don't actually see what's good sex. We only see what's visually interesting.
Yes, and I imagine that would place some kind of level of pressure or almost expectation to live up to, you know, the porn image of sex as well, and that, or even films versions of sex, you know, that it's always, you know, beautifully shot. It's always very
sort of quick and it's subtle.
Yes, and it's all those things. I mean, and that gives a different perspective for somebody and can sort of skew their perspective on sex, can't it?
Oh, absolutely it does.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things I'm always doing is giving people the actual facts about, you know, like how long can it take to orgasm? Well, as long as it takes.
Yeah, that's
but,
right.
You know, 10, 20 minutes is not that unusual. It's not like bang.
Absolutely. Well, it's so fascinating. We could talk I could talk to you about this for another hour or so.
I'm sure you could.
Thank you so much, Jacqueline Hellier, for joining us this evening.